Here is Tom Ackerman.
It's great to be along with you. Cardinal baseball at 1:15 today, 12:20 for the pregame. It's also the greatest day in motorsports, as we have three things going on today. Monaco, which has wrapped up, and we'll tell you about that in just a minute. The Indianapolis 500 and the Coca-Cola 600. Chris Blair of Worldwide Technology Raceway is in Indianapolis at the Motor Speedway. He will join us from Gasoline Alley and will be with us for the start of the Indianapolis 500, or at least the beginning. He'll get to a quiet spot before they get rolling. He's going to join us at 10:30 here. At 10:45, we'll stay in Indy with Mark Boyle, the radio voice of Indiana Pacers. They have a big game tonight against the Knicks. They're up 2-0 in that series. The Cardinals with a great win last night. Yesterday, I should say. I was there. It was in the afternoon, and a great win for Jordan Walker. Feel good for him. That was a performance that I think, you know, is indicative of where he is in his career. He's going to have some ups and downs. He had a misplay in right field. He felt bad for the young man. It got by him. He's got to get that, let that ball, can't let that ball get by him. He has to let that ball stay in front of him, but it did. It got by him, and then he comes back with another hit. He had a double to left, pumped his fists, and was fired up at second base. A clutch hit for him after striking out twice. Then the misplay in right field, and then he comes right back with the big hit to deliver as the Cardinals get a ball that, you know, I mean, a solid shot up the middle for Walker, too. Just a really good at bat, and Walker and the Cardinals walk away with a 6-5 win. Ryan Helsley locks it up. Cardinals are a good team. Are they a World Series contender? Look, they're a team that is in development and a good team that is going to make some noise in the NL Central, and that's where they are. They've won 15 of 19. I said it from the very beginning of the season. After a couple of weeks of frustration, I just was not going to let this season frustrate me. I'm just going to enjoy the fact that players are developing and that I like the entertainment value of the team and kind of see where that takes us. And where that has taken us is this team is two games out in the NL Central. They're going to chase the Cubs for a little while. The Reds are in the distance at the moment. The Reds won yesterday. They're 5.5 back. They're a game under 500, though. They need to get above 500 before they can become a contender. The Cardinals are 6 games over 500. The Cubs are 10 games over 500. Cardinals are 2 games behind them in the NL Central with a long, long way to go. It's May 25th, and these teams won't even play each other until June 23rd. So it's going to be a long time until we see the Cardinals and the Cubs go at it. And in a month, will they still be in this position or not? And after that's all over, will they be in a fight for the July 4th series at Wrigley Field? And then they go at each other a couple more times, including the last series of the season. A Cards-Cubs summer could be just what baseball needs, just what the Cardinals need with their fan base kind of, you know, still showing some protest, even though yesterday the stands were a little more full. There's still noticeable empty seats for a Memorial Day weekend series. But the Cardinals and Cubs going at it this summer, absolutely give it to me. I'm all for it. All for it. Here's the Cardinals lineup today. Lars Nootbaar leads off and plays left field. Mason Wynn is the shortstop batting second. Brendan Donovan bats third and plays second base. And Ivan Herrera is the DH batting cleanup. Does this sound familiar? It's the same lineup as yesterday, mostly. Alec Burleson is at first base batting fifth. Wilson Contreras still dealing with some back spasms this morning, so he is out for another game. Nolan Arenado is at third base batting sixth today. Jordan Walker will be back in right field batting seventh. Pedro Páez is the catcher today for Sonny Gray. Páez bats eighth. And Victor Scott II is the center fielder batting ninth. There's your lineup today. Nootbaar, Wynn, Donovan, Herrera, Burleson, Arenado, Walker, Páez, and Scott. There were so many great plays in the game yesterday that this one might get lost a little bit. In fact, I guarantee you it got lost. But I really like what they did in that eighth inning. Actually, no, it was before that. It was the seventh inning. So they start off with a Burleson hit and then Arenado walks. So you're in business here. You got first and second. And then Walker with his double to make it 3-1, and the place is electrified. But remember, now you have Walker standing at second by himself with nobody out. So what do you do there? You make contact. You keep adding on. You've got to get Walker home. A two-run lead, as we know, is not enough. And Victor Scott is facing a new pitcher. Merrill Kelly had a great game, but he gets removed from the game. His first walk of the game was the walk to Arenado after Matthew Liberatore pitched a great game on the other side. Neither of them walked anyone. That game was moving along. Anyway, Kelly walks Arenado, and then Walker doubles, and the walk burns him. Arenado scores the second run of that hit, and it's 3-1 Cardinals. But you got to get Walker home, and the Cardinals do a great job of that. Victor Scott grounds out, moves Walker to third, and then Joel Pozo. Drew, I'm going to tell you this. If you ever want to win a bet, when Pozo is up, just bet the person. Pozo, I'll bet you Pozo doesn't strike out. How much you want to bet? What odds will you give me? Because he doesn't strike out, ever. He has one strikeout all year. And Pozo makes contact on the Jalen Beeks pitch. In fact, Beeks makes a play on it, and Beeks throws him out. But Pozo grounds out and makes contact, and that gets Walker home. That's a huge run. You know, two guys making outs, but two guys making contact to get Walker home. That's good baseball. And Pozo gets Walker home. Now it's a 4-1 lead. And as we all know by now, they needed all four of those because the Diamondbacks came back on them. And we talked about the misplay by Walker. They end up giving up four runs in the top of the eighth and trail 5-4. And then the heroics from Walker again. And again, the Cardinals manufacture a run in that eighth inning. They play good ball. After Donovan strikes out, Herrera, who is the best hitter on this team, I think, draws a walk. He has such a good eye. Burleson with the double. They stop Herrera at third. And then Arenado does his thing, makes contact, gets the ground ball, and gets the run home. Herrera, as another walk, burns the Diamondbacks to tie the game. And then Walker with his RBI single. So there are some other things that happened in those seventh and eighth innings that I thought were great, and the Cardinals end up getting a very good win here, 6-5. Solid baseball team, a team that I think is going to be fun to watch. I would encourage you to listen to the games on KMOX, catch the games with Chip and Brad and Mark on FanDuel Sports Network when you can, and go to the game when you can. I mean, I will just encourage you to be there. I won't tell you what to do, but I will tell you what you're missing. And yesterday was just like a perfect American day. You know, it's a Saturday afternoon. It's Memorial Day weekend. You got kids all throughout the place because school is getting let out and it's Memorial Day weekend and people are starting to come together as families and traveling. Beautiful blue sky with a couple of clouds. That's it. I mean, it was a blue sky, perfect day. And the Cardinals won a ball game 6-5. That's why you become a Cardinals fan in the first place. And I think people are starting to work their way back to that. But we'll see. Great game yesterday. Now, it has been a very difficult day in the St. Louis area. A very difficult week, I should say, in the St. Louis area. And this is another hard day for people. Getting up in the morning and seeing homes, businesses, and this area destroyed in parts north. We're going to talk to Chris Zimmerman, the CEO of the St. Louis Blues, on how they are making a difference. We will encourage you to go to KMOX.com and donate to the Red Cross. We are partnering with Fox 2. We have raised hundreds of thousands of dollars already, and we're going to continue to do that. The Urban League needs your help. The Red Cross needs your help. We're going to talk about how you can help. But we'll also talk a little hockey with Chris Zimmerman. Then Chris Blair at 10:30. Then Mark Boyle of the Pacers at 10:45. We'll talk some Battle Hawks who are hot right now at 11:05. 11:15 is Lutz Fan and Steel. 11:30 is John Mozeliak. 11:45 is Bernie Miklas. It's a big show, and it's sports on a Sunday morning on KMOX. Cardinal baseball today at 1:15, 12:20 pregame. Greatest day in motorsports with the Monaco Grand Prix complete now. Lando Norris cruised to victory in Formula One. Indianapolis 500 is today. Chris Blair joins us from Indianapolis Motor Speedway in our next segment. And tonight is the Coca-Cola 600 on NASCAR's Cup Circuit in Charlotte. So we got a very busy day for motorsports fans. Hockey fans are treated to playoffs each and every day, and joining us is the CEO of the St. Louis Blues, who I am certain wishes that he was watching the Blues play in the playoffs, and that is Chris Zimmerman. How are you, Z? Great to be with you.
Yeah, good morning, Tom. Thanks. And yes, of course, it would be a pleasant and great thing to be out there right now. You know, this is it's a special time of year for hockey, and we would love to be back out there at this time, and we are going to keep fighting towards that.
Well, you will continue to make moves, I know, to get there. And I was walking the Arch grounds recently. I took a little walk around our national park, and I thought about that time, that rally. We were down there broadcasting live in the stage and the scene, and it feels like it wasn't that long ago, but you want to be there. You just are desperate to get back there, and it was so close. I mean, just by seconds to get to the next round.
It certainly was. It was a harsh way for a season to end, but it was also just a spectacular final 2 months of hockey, and the momentum and the energy that has once again behind this team gives us a great, great tailwind as we think about getting towards next season. And I think you really heard the commitment from the players, obviously from the coaching staff, through, you know, Doug Armstrong and Alexander Steen. We have reset and we're moving forward. And I haven't felt this kind of energy behind our team since that 19 cup win.
Wow. Florida won 6-2 over Carolina. They're up 3-0 in that series today. It's Dallas and Edmonton. That's a 2:00 start. They're even at a game apiece. I had Tom Stillman on the show last week, and the chairman talked about, among other things, Alex Steen and his development, as he is a year away from taking over for Doug Armstrong. Let's get your thoughts on Steener and what he's done to get himself into that position, working hand in hand with Army.
Well, I think the big thing is that I see in Alexander Steen and the work that he's doing, that I like to use the phrase, he's a sponge. And he's a sponge for information and insight. And he's been working really to touch every part of the organization, including certainly the business operations, understanding the work we do, the role that the players, that the hockey staff plays in that. I'm just really impressed with Steener and how he's thinking about it. And it's a sense of both being close enough to understand the needs of the players and the needs of a, if you will, a different generation of player. And at the same time, thinking forward and thinking about what this next stage means and what it's going to take to get back to the cup.
Chris, what about the Blues from a health standpoint financially and tickets for that matter? When do tickets start to go back on sale, and what do you anticipate from your fan base? So what are you hearing from them?
Well, that I mentioned before, momentum and energy, and we've already we've renewed season tickets. We've already hit our goal. I think it's 93%. There's always people who have different life conditions and different reasons why they might not come back. But so whether it's renewals, seeing the amount of new season tickets pick up, our sponsorship partners are ready to go. People want next season to come in a way I haven't seen for quite a while. And that's the type of energy that we need. You know, we'll start the year with that 15-game home winning streak intact, and that the fans created an energy there that certainly the players, Monty talked about, that I think we are building off right now. And so it's not about them going on sale. They're on sale. We renew early in the year, and lots of indicators that people are interested. in making sure they're part of this next wave of Blues hockey.
Well, it's a big year of hockey and a big year for Enterprise Center in your 30th anniversary season, and you have the U.S. Figure Skating Championships coming. You got the NCAA tournament coming. The Frozen Four was here. I took my daughter. She's going to Miami of Ohio, where she will be immersed in college hockey, so she had a blast with all of that. But you had so much, the PWHL, you had college championships at Centene Community Ice Center in Maryville. It was a busy year for the heartland of hockey.
Oh, yeah, no, it was a great year for hockey, quite honestly, and touching all the different levels from the women's game to the college game, both NCAA as well as the club hockey championships being back in St. Louis. That's been our goal, to get as deeply connected to the game, to touch it in every way we can, to bring bring hockey to St. Louis. And certainly the work that we did to establish new facilities at certainly Centene, the Maryville Ice Center, and then the work that we did at the Enterprise Center to make that once again a top tier facility. And I think on top of that, what I'm really proud of is the way our staff, from our game staff, our host, through to everybody involved in the building, when people come into Enterprise Center, when they come into St. Louis, they feel our energy, they feel the excitement, and it's really becoming one of our differentiating factors that's helping us to continue to win really these great events that are coming, that'll continue to come and that we'll continue to bid for.
And Blues fans are great fans as well. And I grew up a Blues fan. I remember distinctly growing up going with my dad for the first time in the early 80s and then watching those teams try and fail to make it. And then in the 90s, the excitement of Brett Hall and Adam Oates and scoring goals every night and such great times. And then I started covering the team in the late 90s, and that's when I met Mark Sauer. It was right around the time that the team was having some success, winning the President's Trophy and beyond. And Mark Sauer was so kind to me. I was really nobody. I mean, I was just a young reporter, but he just took to me just as he did to so many people. Very warm, inviting, and I'm very sad about his passing, Chris. I know that you have many people working in your building that feel the same way.
Yeah, I think, you know, Mark's contributions to Blues hockey were certainly significant. He set a certain level of excellence during his time leading the organization. And it's, you know, I always have felt a real, if you will, sort of debt to the people who have come before me, before our entire organization, and built this, the ethic, if you will, of the Blues that has led to us creating one of the great hockey markets in America and in the NHL. And it's certainly marked with the people that he brought in, the winning tradition that organization had during that time period is a pretty powerful legacy that we all work to continue to build on.
Mark Sauer was the Blues chief executive officer and president from 1996 to 2006. The president and CEO of the St. Louis Blues, Chris Zimmerman, is with us now. And final thing is what you are doing for our community. I know that all of our teams and our leaders are coming together to help what has been a devastating tornado and multiple touches of tornadoes through the area that has just decimated parts of this area. What are you doing to give back on behalf of the St. Louis Blues, Chris?
Well, it is devastating. And as you know, Tom, it's going to be a long road on a lot of the cleanup and a lot of the work that needs to be done. We've partnered with both the Urban League, the Red Cross, and the United Way. Every one of those entities has meaningful programs going on. We're in a fundraising mode, both with a 50-50, where all of those proceeds will go back to those programs. We've also got, we've been out volunteering. Those are needs that each of the programs that are happening to support the community, they need people. And again, I see this going on for quite a while. And so we've been out doing that and just recognizing that the need is broad. And though we may only, any single entity, any company, any individual can only do so much, it is going to be the power to continue to come together. So people go to our app, our website, you'll see a couple of those different opportunities to participate. We've got auction going on. So we're working on the financial front, on the people front, and also just trying to be a voice that can help all of these entities. If you don't mind, I want to mention one program that we're getting involved with, which is all around supporting food trucks going out into the community in places that people may not have transportation. They're just going to be some of the greater needs up front. And working with the United Way, if people went to helpingpeople.org/stormrelief, and I'll send that to you, Tom, $10 feeds a person, $4,000 feeds 400 people through a food truck for a day. And these are programs that I think are really, really meaningful. And we're looking forward to support and joining in with so many others. I do think that this is a big moment for our community to come together and to show the strength that we can have in helping each other.
I agree. So many good ideas in there to give back and to be there. Just to be there, and just the thought that you would get up this morning and go volunteer, or just to be present and to give, that's what St. Louis is all about. We were built on that, and we are known around the country as being a very generous area, and now here we are giving back to our own. Chris, thank you for all of that. We appreciate it. I know that people will use those resources as you continue to aid a number of organizations, fundraising proceeds, benefiting the American Red Cross Disaster Relief Efforts and the United Way of Greater St. Louis Severe Storm Tornado Relief Fund. There it is right up on the screen there, helpingpeople.org/stormrelief.
Yeah, thank you for that, Tom.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's a big one.
Yep, you bet. Thank you for this, Chris. Thanks for the time. Best of luck with your organization. As well as I do, before you know it, they're in training camp. I mean, the hockey season moves so fast. So we appreciate
it. We'll be back at it soon. But we're back, quite honestly, we're back at it now. Mm-hmm. But thanks, everybody. We're really appreciative. I think you heard it from players, from our coaches. Our fans came through and supported this club in a major way. That energy is powerful. We'll look forward to that next year. We'll also look forward to that power supporting our community.
Thanks so much, Chris. Have a great day.
Thanks, Tom.
Chris Zimmerman, the president and CEO of the St. Louis Blues. We take a break. When we come back, Sports on a Sunday Morning takes you to Indianapolis. The Indy 500 is about to run. It will start in just about an hour and a half. And joining us is Chris Blair, the general manager of Worldwide Technology Raceway. He is there in Gasoline Alley. Back with Chris after this. The 109th running of the Indianapolis 500 is today in Indianapolis, and joining us is the Executive Vice President, General Manager of Worldwide Technology Raceway, Chris Blair, joining us. How are you, Chris?
Well, good, Tom, and guess what?
What?
It's sprinkling in Indianapolis.
Yeah,
it seems like every time I call you from a racetrack anymore, from Daytona, Indianapolis, whatever, it's usually sprinkling when I talk to you.
Our producer,
it looks like it's going to blow over.
Our producer, Drew Young, just asked me, what's the weather there? And I looked earlier, I said, 60s and cloudy, not raining, I don't think. But now Chris telling us it's sprinkling a little bit. I guarantee you that won't slow down the party. I've been there for rain before. I was there the year that was 97. When they got rained out twice and they ran the thing on Tuesday, and I went to all 3 days.
Oh, man. Really? Well, I'll tell you what, Tom, I've been coming here for years, and I've never seen an Indianapolis 500 like this one. I mean, it's comparable to the 100th running. I mean, the place is sold out. There are people crammed everywhere. It's amazing. It's simply amazing. So it's got me really excited, hoping this wave of enthusiasm for IndyCar racing continues for at least another 3 weeks, because I'd love to have just a tenth of this crowd here in St. Louis. It's fantastic.
Yeah, you would. 350,000 anticipated at the racetrack today. And at your track on June 15th, Father's Day, you've been moved to a night race. When I heard that, I said, oh, Chris Blair's a happy man, and you're not the only one. That's big time. You get on the big Fox network, and you get a night race at Worldwide Technology Raceway. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm feeling pretty happy. We're bumping Bart Simpson and Stewie Griffin for Pat O'Ward and Alex Palou that day. So that's a great one for us. And a lot of people just didn't really know what to expect about that. And I said, you know, this is for us. Sunday night prime time. It's never been done before, and we love being the ones that try new and crazy things. I mean, this could be the start of something. As I was telling some folks the other day, I'm sure that when the NFL fans saw that schedule back in 1970, there was going to be a Monday night game in Cleveland. They were probably shaking their heads wondering what was going on. This might be one of those moments for us. You know, it could be the start of Sunday night IndyCar for quite a while. We're pretty excited about that. It's
yeah,
great.
All for it. June 15th, Worldwide Technology Raceway, the Bomarito Automotive Group 500. The defending champion is Joseph Newgarden. In fact, he's won at your track five times. He's also the defending champion of the Indy 500. He's trying to win three in a row. Chris, it's going to be difficult. He starts from the 32nd spot, getting bumped back after the penalty to Team Penske. But I've got to say, he's got a great car, and he'll be up for the challenge if anybody is, he is.
Well, I tell you what, we were watching him in practice the other day, and it was hard not to watch him. He was absolutely incredible, either on the solo runs or when he was out there running with the pack. He's the fastest guy on the track, and I think he's extra motivated. His pit crew won the pit crew contest on Friday, so they're motivated. So they're going to make sure they're getting him on and off pit road, which is key here. And he's going to be going wide open to the front. I think before the halfway point of the race, he's going to be a factor in who's up front.
He is your defending champion. He loves your track. And I think that, you know, they're two totally different, for those not as familiar with IndyCar racing or motorsports in general, two totally different experiences. You have a long, long endurance race going on in Indianapolis, basically, with a lot of laps and a lot of distance. At your track, it is a balance between you have to be a great driver and you have to prep. And I think the drivers have had and have learned to have fun at Worldwide Technology Raceway. Tight turns one and two, a little more flat and open in turns three and four, Chris.
Yeah, you know, I always like to say ours is the closest thing these guys are going to get to going back to the roots of sprint car racing, because, you know, it's a quick racetrack, short track, no two turns are the same. You have to be aggressive. You have to be hammered down the whole time. So it's really a sprint to the finish, where this is more of an endurance run. And that just means there's going to be a lot of action. Last year, there's 676 passes, 22 lead changes among 11 different drivers. You just don't get that anywhere else. So that's why everybody loves it. It's just a fun race to watch, and it's a fun race to be a part of.
I love that these two races, the Indianapolis 500 and the Bomarito Automotive Group 500, are just weeks from each other, right on top of each other. The fans can make plans, and they will. I assure you of that. From Indiana, we'll come over and attend your race. And I know that you've made it enticing for St. Louis fans, both sports and music fans, to enjoy your race. You make it a weekend of activity, just like you do for NASCAR, Chris.
Yeah, and that's one of the things we really wanted to lean into this. We've seen such a huge response from the Confluence Music Festival that, you know, we partnered up with Discover Downstate Illinois Tourism. They're helping us out by bringing Soul Asylum, Cracker, and Sponge to the race weekend. So we've got that now going on. We've expanded out our campground. We've got concerts that will be taking place in the campground every night. So we're going to, our goal is that when you go to Worldwide Technology Raceway, you're going to an event and a happening. And that's what our number one mission is. And we're seeing that that works. People love it.
They do. Before we go, and I've partnered with you for a long time on this since way before the pursuit of NASCAR Cup, but we have it. And now it's our fourth year. I got to get your thoughts on what the buzz is right now about Kyle Larson. What's the latest on Larson? Is he is attempting, and this rain doesn't help, attempting to run the Indianapolis 500 and then head over to the Coca-Cola 600 tonight in North Carolina?
It's a huge buzz here. I just saw Steve O'Donnell, the president of NASCAR. He was out here on the grid. He's going to watch Kyle race here, and then he's heading to Charlotte to watch him also. But it's got everybody's attention. You know, everybody wants to see what's going to happen. That's why when, as soon as these sprinkles started, everybody groaned, and that's the first thing everybody talked about was not if the race was going to be delayed. Everybody's talking about what's it going to do to Kyle. But I think he's going to be pumped up. We can get this thing in. He's going to be flat out all the way around on both. And it's just phenomenal to see that. I remember when Tony Stewart did it. I remember when Kurt Busch did it. It just really says something about the whole sport that you get, you know, people from both sides all cheering for the one guy. You want to see him do good. So it adds that extra element to this this race weekend. And we're all excited for it.
He is the greatest driver on the planet right now. And he's been such a big part of your race and has helped you market that race, the NASCAR race. And I think a lot of people in St. Louis will be pulling for Kyle Larson today to be there for both and have success. Who knows? I mean, who knows what he might be able to do? It's going to be a lot of fun. I love the Indianapolis 500 with all my heart. And Chris Blair, who is the general manager of Worldwide Technology Raceway, is there. I am envious. And I can't wait to see you when you get back for your race on June 15th, the Bomarito Automotive Group 500.
All right, Tom, thanks. Let's just pray that the sun comes back out and this thing stays dry. We need a good race today.
All right, have a great time. We appreciate it. Say hi to everyone at Fox.
You don't have anything.
I sure will. Take care, Tom.
There is Chris Blair, the general manager of Worldwide Technology Raceway. Fox is going to have his race in 3 weeks on June 15th. It's going to be a night race in St. Louis, Madison, Illinois. It's going to be unbelievable. Love Indy 500. We will take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to stay in Indianapolis. The radio voice of the Indiana Pacers is Mark Boyle. Once upon a time, he worked right here at KMOX. He is the longtime voice of the Pacers, and they have a huge game tonight. What a day in Indianapolis. You have the 500 and then the Pacers and Knicks with the Pacers up 2-0. We'll be back right after this on KMOX. Welcome back to the show from the Stiefel Sports Studio. We've had a good one already. The CEO of the Blues, Chris Zimmerman, the general manager of Worldwide Technology Raceway at the Indy 500, Chris Blair. Now we go back to Indianapolis. Oh, what a night they're going to have. The Pacers and the Knicks will play Game 3 tonight in front of that raucous crowd with the Pacers up 2-0 and the radio voice of the Indiana Pacers, a KMOX alum, is Mark Boyle. Mark, it's great to have you back on the radio station. How are you?
I am well, Tom. How are you?
I am doing great. It's great. Tell me first, relive, if you will, your days here at KMOX Radio.
Well, literally, they were days. I came there in July of 88, and I left to go to the Pacers in September. So I can't remember the exact dates, but I was there 2 months, maybe. It was a place I always wanted to work because when I was growing up in Minneapolis, you know, you could hear it at night. And Jack Buck was doing games, and Harry Carey was around, and Dan Kelly on the hockey, and it was an iconic radio station. I always wanted to work there. But the way things worked out, I was only there for like 10 seconds.
But when you are a KMOXer for 10 seconds, you're a KMOXer for life. That's just the way it is. So
I appreciate that.
We take you in the family as well, and we appreciate all that you're doing representing us out there. And as the voice of the Pacers, you got yourself a heck of a basketball team. And let me start with this. One heck of a coach. I mean, this Rick Carlisle is something special. Tell me about your relationship with Carlisle.
Well, we go back to the late 90s. He came here as an assistant coach under Larry Bird. And he was in that role for the 3 years that Bird was the head coach. After that, he went to Detroit. He came back here as the head coach. He was here for 4 years in the early O's, and then he went to Dallas, had a great run where he won a championship, and now he's been here for the last few seasons. So I've known him for almost 30 years. He's a fascinating guy. He's a self-taught pianist. He's a licensed pilot. He's not a typical coach, if there is such a thing, in this specific regard. If you ask him a question, at least privately, if he trusts you, you'll get a very thoughtful answer. And it's not cookie cutter response. And I'll tell you this, Tom, about him. The thing that impresses me most, his record speaks for itself. He doesn't need me to advocate for him in terms of being a great coach. But when he was here back in the day, he was old school. He was very much a control freak, called all the plays from the sidelines. But as the game has evolved and changed, he's done the same thing. And now his team is free-flowing and running. He doesn't call any plays. He lets the players play. He's adapted to the mindset of the young player now without losing any of his expertise or his standards. He does have boundaries, and players have to adhere to them, but they're not nearly what they were before, and one of the reasons he's been so successful is because he's so good at adapting, which is not that easy to do.
That's well said, and I think that his teams do all the little things well. You know, it's a very good basketball team, and I think that in this day and age, we watch YouTube clips, SportsCenter clips, and we experience sports through clips. So we see Halliburton's shot, we see all the acrobatics and amazing plays, but wouldn't you agree, Mark, that this team is physical around the glass, they defend, they make key passes, share the ball. They do a lot of little things that you have to do to win. Maybe they've snuck up on some people, but they're as a complete team as anybody in the league.
I think maybe they've snuck up on the casual fan, but I don't think they've snuck up on anybody who's in the NBA. They know this team made it to the conference finals last season. They know they're explosive. They know they're well coached. And they do have an Achilles or two. Notably, they're an extraordinarily poor rebounding team, and that's been a problem even when they've been winning. But they're tenacious, they're competitive, they fit together beautifully, they play the game in a manner that's really hard to defend. And while they're not great defensively, they're good enough because they're so good in other areas. And it's a team effort. It's not just the coach being brilliant, which he is. It's not just the players being good and committed, which they are. And they do have Tyrese Halliburton, who has become a marquee player. That said, they're still more of an ensemble cast than most teams in the NBA. Parts are not interchangeable, but they're critical. When they started 10 and 15, it was in large part because they didn't have Andrew Nembhard and Aaron Nesmith, two players who are well-respected and well-known in the NBA, but I think maybe the casual fan is not at all aware of how important they are. And that's what I mean when I say it's an ensemble cast. They fit together beautifully. They play wonderful team basketball. They're fun to watch. I don't know how far they'll get. They might lose the next four, or they might not lose again and win the championship. Most likely something in between, but they're a delight to watch in large part because of the way they're coached and the commitment of the players.
A couple more things for Mark Boyle. What is it like to experience a silent Madison Square Garden? And let alone go to Madison Square Garden in a playoff atmosphere.
You know, Tom, I say this all the time. Madison Square Garden, this is a dichotomy, so follow along. Madison Square Garden is easily the biggest dump in the NBA. That said, it's easily the coolest arena in the NBA because of what goes on and how passionate the fans are, the history, the aura, the mystique. And we've seen this before. The Pacers and Knicks have had a longstanding rivalry. They played in the playoffs 8 times. 3 times in the conference finals. And if you get one in their building, it's like a library. When they're at their peak, when the Knicks are going well, it's hard to hear yourself think. And that's not unlike any arena, but Madison Square Garden, for some reason, it's just more fun if you're with the visiting team to hear it go quiet. And we saw that, especially in game one, when the Pacers staged another really unpredictable type rally to win that game.
Boy, I agree with you wholeheartedly. It's one of the things about New York fans that works against them is when things don't go well, it is really, really quiet. And when things do go well, obviously, it's an absolute party. And
well,
so,
Tom, it's not just the fans. Like, there is no better place to be a professional athlete when you're going well than New York. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, there's no worse place to be a professional athlete when you're not going well than New York. After the Pacers won game one, the headline on the back page of the New York Post was Choke 2.0. So if you're going well, it's just fantastic. You can do no wrong. You pay for nothing. Life is a dream. But if you're going poorly, it's a nightmare. And I think that that's sort of an East Coast thing, but it's more true in New York than anywhere else.
I agree. That back page was unbelievable with the choking signal of Reggie and of Tyrese. Mark Boyle is with us. One last thing. So now you come home. And you're playing the Knicks tonight in Indianapolis. I am an Indiana University graduate. I feel like I know Indiana fans very well. I've been to countless games in Assembly Hall. Tell me about the Pacer fan base.
Well, they're similar to most in that the loyal fans are loyal no matter what. But the difference here, and perhaps it's because it's a small market, the loyal fans are not nearly as large in number as they are in some other cities. So you'd be surprised. You know, everyone thinks this is the basketball capital of America, and they do love the sport here. But I'll give you an example. The Pacers have the lowest price tickets in the NBA, yet they still sell out less than half their games. So it's like any other city. There are exceptions, Portland being one. I think St. Louis with the Cardinals is an exception. But generally, if your team's not good, they ignore you here. If you are good, though, they're in your corner. In other words, what I'm saying, Tom, is this. It's like 98% of the fan bases in the United States. It's a bandwagon town. And if you're going well, the bandwagon doesn't have enough room for all the folks, and they are passionate. And on a day like today, when we have the Indianapolis 500 in the afternoon and a game at night, it's a madhouse here.
Oh, I totally get that. And I appreciate you being with us. I think that to get you on a game day is very special. Thank you for making the time. It's going to be a heck of a night and day in Indianapolis, as you mentioned, with the 500 followed by Pacers, Knicks. And it's great to hear your voice back on the radio station. When I was producing for Ron Jacober, I do believe we had you on a time or two, and I've heard you through the years. It's great to chat with you again.
Oh, I've been on with Ron. I've been on with Jim Holder. I've been on occasion over the years since I've been here. This is my 37th season here. And I will tell you this for future reference, since I am a proud alum, you can call me anytime and I'd be glad to be on.
It's great to have you on. Thanks a lot. Have a great day and good luck tonight.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it.
Mark Boyle, radio voice of the Indiana Pacers. They've got the Knicks tonight. When we come back after the news, much more Lutz Fan and Steel, John Mozeliak, Bernie Miklas on KMOX.
From KMOX Sports, this is the Graybar Sports on a Sunday morning. Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs. Now, from the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, here is Tom Ackerman.
Welcome back to the show. Let me get you updated on all kinds of things happening in sports. Let's reset. Cardinals play today against the Diamondbacks, 1:15 start, 12:20 for the pregame. The Cardinals will not have Wilson Contreras in the lineup again. He is out due to back spasms. Their lineup reads like this. Nootbaar, Wynn, Donovan, Herrera, Burleson, Arenado, Walker, Pajes, and Scott. Herrera is the DH again. He's hitting .394 this season with 5 home runs and 23 RBIs in limited time. Remember, he missed a lot of time due to a knee injury. Mason Wynn in that 2 spot looks very comfortable. Burleson had a big hit yesterday to boost his average to .291. Jordan Walker over the 200 mark now. He's at .203 with his 2-hit day, including 3 RBIs, a big double, and then a big hit in the 8th inning after his misplay in right field. The Cardinals will get after it today with Sonny Gray on the mound. Gray is 5-1 with a 4.02 ERA. Brandon Fott's very good, 7-3, 3.81 ERA. In fact, he came into this series as a league leader in wins, so he's going for his 8th win already. So a tough one today as the Cardinals and Diamondbacks will go at it, and the Cardinals try to get themselves to a sweep to 16 of 20 if they win this game. And it would push them to 7 games over 500. They would get their 30th win if they can get it. They're 29-23. John Mozeliak will join us in just a bit. This is the greatest day in motorsports. You started the day with the Monaco Grand Prix, and it was won by Lando Norris. Norris locked up a wheel into the first corner, but still managed to hold off last year's winner and took his first Grand Prix since the season-opening Australian Grand Prix in Formula One. Then the Indianapolis 500, which is set to get underway here shortly. The Indy 500 will be featuring Kyle Larson, who's going to try to run in both races today, both this afternoon's Indy 500 and tonight's Coca-Cola 600 in Charlotte, North Carolina. Joseph Newgarden, who we visited with on this show, Sports on a Sunday Morning, is going for his third straight Indy 500, but Newgarden will have to start from the back because of a penalty from NASCAR, from IndyCar to the Team Penske, and he's got the best car out there. Chris Blair talked about it with us in the last segment. We also have NHL and NBA playoffs today. The NBA in Indianapolis, Mark Boyle, the voice of the Pacers, was with us last segment. The Pacers are up 2-0 on the Knicks and play tonight at 7 o'clock. That spread is tight, though, if you're interested. The Pacers are just a 2-point favorite tonight. Maybe surprising against the Knicks, although these games have been very close. Last night was not close. Minnesota destroyed Oklahoma City 143-101. Talk about striking back and taking a game in the series. They're now down 2-1 in that series. In the NHL, Florida's up 3-0 now on Carolina, winning 6-2 last night. This afternoon at 2, it'll be Dallas and Edmonton. They will play. That series is a 1-1 series back in Edmonton for the game tonight. How about the St. Louis Battlehawks? They won over the Brahmas 39-13 on Friday night, and their regular season finale will be this Friday at D.C. It'll be aired on Channel 2, Fox 2, at 7 p.m. Battlehawks, rather, are 7-2. They've clinched a playoff spot. They're a half game ahead of D.C. in the XFL Conference. D.C. plays Houston today, and the Battlehawks go to D.C. for that finale. And then on June 8th, they will be playing in the XFL Conference Championship at the Dome. And on June 14th, they'll be playing, hopefully, in the UFL Championship at the Dome. Can you imagine if they get to the championship this time, what that Dome will be like? And what St. Louis will be like if they win it? Boy, St. Louis could use a parade, could use a champion, could use a little boost. And the Battlehawks are well aware of that. And they'll be playing on Friday, then the following Sunday, and then Saturday the 14th, hopefully. And then the following day will be the Bomarito Automotive Group 500. So you'll have IndyCar in town for a Sunday night for Father's Day weekend, a possible Battlehawks victory, and perhaps those fans will head over to the IndyCar race on Sunday and make a big weekend out of it. But the Battlehawks are really good. I mean, it's fun to have a good football team in town again. 39-13. They said 27,890 fans at the Dome. And while that doesn't sound like a lot by NFL standards, that is a massive crowd by UFL standards. They just don't draw in this league, except in St. Louis, for the most part. There are a couple others that maybe put some fans in, but not like St. Louis does. And they're loaded with great talent. I think they're flying right now with their quarterback, Max Duggan. They had a forced fumble and recovery for a touchdown by Micah Abraham, their cornerback in that game on Friday. And they were off and running. I mean, they have good opportunistic defensive players. They have good players on offense. Their backup quarterback, Brandon Silvers, hit Hakeem Butler for a 22-yard touchdown in the fourth quarter. He was 5 of 8 for 80 yards in the game. Duggan, 12 of 17 for 133 yards and a score. He did not play in the second half, as he shouldn't. They were already in the conference championship, so there's no reason to risk injury there. And their head coach, Anthony Becht, has this team rolling right now. Last year was a big disappointment. Mike Martz and I had the call for that conference championship game. It was a two-game package. We were going to come back if the Battlehawks were in the championship, and they didn't do it. They lost to San Antonio in that conference championship. This time around, motivated, and the UFL, rightfully so, gave them the championship game at the Dome, but they've also made the conference championship at the Dome. So after this game against D.C., they're going to play both games, hopefully, in the Dome and wrap up as a champion. Wouldn't that be unbelievable? We'll see how that all goes. It's 11-13 on the other side of things. St. Louis City SC is struggling. They have now gone 11 consecutive games without a win. We're going to talk to Lutz Fantasteel, their sporting director, next. on KMOX Sports on a Sunday morning from the Stiefel Sports Studio. Don Mozeliak, Cardinals President of Baseball Operations at 11:30. Bernie Miklas at 11:45. Before we take you to Cardinal Baseball, 12:20 pregame, 1:15 first pitch. Cards go for the sweep today against the Arizona Diamondbacks. Joining us right now is the Sporting Director for St. Louis City SC. It's Lutz Pfannenstiel after a 1-0 loss to Colorado last night. Lutz, good morning. It's always good to have you on.
Good morning, Tom.
I know it's disappointing, and let's start with that. It's the same story, but just in a different way. Describe what happened last night as you attempted to pull off a victory at Colorado.
Yeah, I think, you know, I believe the effort was there yesterday. We did create a good number of chances. We had early on, after the weather delay, a huge chance by Cedric Teuchert, the one-on-one with the keeper, which we missed, which would have completely changed, I think, the gear of this game. And then you concede again before halftime, really in the moment when it hurts the most, a goal which was preventable, was like collectively not well defended. And then we, you know, when we have to chase a game in the second half against a team like Colorado, we know they are very well organized defensively. They don't give you too much. But we had enough possession. I think we also created enough chances to walk away with something at least yesterday. And we missed out on that. And, you know, it's a shame, because I think there was an opportunity to play against an opponent which had a big number of injuries as well. So they didn't have their best team out. And, yeah, I thought we had plenty of opportunities to capitalize yesterday.
Back to that toy shirt opportunity there. How would you describe that just in depth? Is that as much toy shirt, as much goalkeeper, a little bit of both? How did that not take place?
You know, Cedric is a player who can score in these opportunities usually with closed eyes, because if he has the confidence one-on-one with keepers, that's his biggest strength. I think it was a great save by the keeper. Yeah, he made himself big. He made it for the right moment. But that's a chance which was massive, you know, 0-0. And it's just this little moment sometimes which changing the run of play completely. Yeah, it was a great pass by Klaus. And I think Teuchert did everything right. And just the finish was probably a bit too central, and the keeper could make the save. As I said, it was a brilliant save by their backup goalkeeper, and a wasted opportunity.
I think your team, while solid defensively, and we'll get into that in just a minute, is missing those opportunities offensively. I mean, when your team is at its best offensively, what does it need to be? Dangerous. Is that an accurate description? Do you need to be, and when you are great, you're creating danger?
Yeah, I think it has to do a lot with confidence, and it has a lot to do with the way, you know, the style of play. But right now, I think there is a lot of focus on being that solid defensively. I think that our way of play is always, you know, more like really active and aggressive, and it just comes, I think, also with the run of the results. You lose confidence, you back off. And I think we only can be dangerous if we attack as a unit. And sometimes, yeah, you give away a few more chances on your own goal, but you create more going forward. And I think, you know, it's all about scoring goals. If you can't score, you can't win. Very simple. And if you want to turn the season around, then Tom, it's about winning games and not getting a 1-1 or a 30-0 somewhere. I think to get in there, I think, you know, we need to set our standards and expectations at the club again, where we must be real and not shy away from that's not met at the moment, to be honest. And my job is to try to create an environment for the coach and for the team to succeed. So we're analyzing at the moment everything you can imagine behind the scenes and try to see where exactly that standard's leaving us at the moment. And it's not just, I think, for me and for the club, but it's also for you, for the media and for the fans, that I think they need to know that the principles we had set out early on when we started that in 2020, you know, nothing has shifted. We still want to be the team who entertains. We still want to be the team who presses, who works hard, who has that St. Louis style in them. And yeah, we need to work that out right now. We can't wait any longer and need to get back on track as soon as we can.
Because the impression that I get is that, and correct me if I'm wrong, but what I hear from you and from other people in that room when I hear some of the quotes coming out of there is that that's not who we are. We're actually better than this. And that's where the frustration comes in, that you feel like you should be finishing those games, that you feel like you should be able to find ways to score against Colorado.
Yeah, 100%. I can't agree. Yeah, that's not what we are. We are. We should be better than that, and we need to figure out where exactly we actually cannot close the game down at the moment. You know, like go back into the game against Minnesota on Wednesday. I think the second half there were some really moments of good football. You know, turning the game around, getting 2-1 up, some really good individual pieces of work as well. And then in the end, you know, we kind of letting ourselves down to concede late or not being able to come back. And I think that's our own responsibility, that we have to meet that. And I know there's also a big part up to me to get that right. You know, it's about accountability. And I think everybody this week, again, we have to sit down and really analyze where we can do things better or where exactly is the problem and find solutions.
There was a lot of speculation running rampant yesterday. I don't know how much you read social media, but there was a lot of speculation about the future of Olof Mellberg. Everybody was questioning what was going to happen to the coach, and I thought, well, they probably should have listened to the show because when I asked you about Coach Mellberg and what's going on in the relationship, you said, I don't think it's a good thing to be discussing the coach right now. We need to get better for everybody to step up. Do you still feel that way?
Yeah, I still feel that way, you know. But as I said, we have to have some hard conversations and some clear matrix is what we want to hit, and that's coming down now. I would say in the next 2-3 days to analyze that very careful. I mean, tomorrow is a bank holiday, definitely not for us. You know, that's a good moment to really sit down, rewatch the last 3 games. I mean, we had 3 losses in the last 7 days. Watch the 3 games, and I think we should be able to figure out where exactly we have our issues and how deep that is and how we can fix it. And I think that must be a team effort. And as I said, you know, it's accountability from everybody's side. I mean, we owe that to the ownership and definitely also to the fans. And we need to turn the season around. And as I said last week, the only thing what we can do is that we need to work as hard as possible and we need to fight. And that's the way, I think, to go forward when it comes on the field. But what's happened off the field, we need to really sit down and analyze the situation.
And you have a good idea of the temperature of the room, as we like to say, the players themselves. You have good relationships with them. Are they together? Is this still a cohesive unit? And how do you avoid the finger pointing and you know, players starting to fall apart from each other?
I mean, there always will be some finger pointing, because if you don't get the results, you know, there's always somebody does make the mistake, and then it's important actually to unify that and realize it, that it's a team sport. It's not just one person makes a mistake or it's one situation which changes the game. There is always many opportunities to help the guy who made the mistake out to fix it. And I think I think the players definitely are very willing to fix the situation, don't finger point, work hard together. But right now the danger is that we're coming into this moment, we haven't won for 11 games, you know, that's nearly a third of the season if you're putting it out in numbers with 34 games, and that's a shocking number, and that's a number we need to also realize that's reality right now. So finger pointing doesn't help us at all. You know, it needs to be a team effort to get us out from that struggle at the moment. And I believe the players have that, but it's also very easy to fall into the belief that it's a losing culture, and we need to change that. And it's mostly in these moments, you know, it's one situation, it's one moment who completely switches over and things are turning into something good. We have to find exactly what that moment is and have that win again, and I think then we could kickstart the season. As I said last week, you know, we were talking a lot about the playoffs, Tom, and the playoffs are right now. I told you last week, I don't want to talk the playoffs anymore. I want to talk about to be able to go out there, compete, and be out there, be sharp, and try to be as hardworking as possible, as organized as possible, but also really fight for the city. We represent the Taylor family, we represent the ownership, we represent the city of St. Louis, and we need to be proud to do that. And right now, I do understand that sometimes that feeling creeps in the heads that, well, are we good enough? What's going on? So that's something we need to change. We need to get back into that warrior mentality we had in definitely in 2023 and also partly in 2024 towards the end of the season. As I said, it's still the squad from last year who won a lot. And we just need to figure out what to do next to get back on track.
I know that, and the last thing for Lutz Fantasteel is that you told me also last week that you were embarrassed, you were disappointed because you knew how important sports were for the community and you wanted to be there for them for some of that just good feeling after the tornado ripped through the city. But I will say, I'll commend your organization that those proceeds from the City 2 match going to tornado relief. Lutz, that's a wonderful thing that I know the organization continues to push forward. We talked to the Blues last hour. We'll talk to the Cardinals this hour about how sports can play a role, but franchises can give back, and you are doing just that.
Yeah, 100%. I think, you know, we went on Friday, also a few guys, like I think we had 40 people from the club to help directly. I went there also with our president to that area, and it was shocking to see, but great how many people actually are willing to help to fix that damage, and then having on the same day the game with City 2 to get all that proceedings to the to the relief. I think it was a great thing, and I think sports obviously can unite. On that note, also was a great game, by the way, that City 2 game, 6-3 against Portland, with the stunning performance by the youngsters, where I had the feeling you can see in City 2 our principles, our style of play, which was beautiful to watch. And I think that's what we have to get into the back, into the head of our first team boys as well, that everything is possible. We have to start to believe in each other.
Lutz, thank you for the time. We appreciate your Sunday morning visits. Have a great rest of your day.
Thanks, Tom. Have a good day.
You too. Lutz Fantasteel, Sporting Director, St. Louis City SC. When we come back, John Mozeliak, his Cardinals are on fire right now. They have won 15 of 19 games. He is with us live on KMOX next.
From the Stifel Financial Sports Studio, here is Tom Ackerman.
Some drizzle at the track right now at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. Hopefully they can get things going on schedule in the Indy 500. We'll continue to monitor that. Meanwhile, joining us on the line live, his team is on fire right now. They've won 15 of 19. He is the president of baseball operations of the St. Louis Cardinals. John Mozeliak is with us. Mo, good morning. Good to have you as always.
Good morning, Tommy. How are you?
Doing well. Going for the sweep today. I was there yesterday. My wife, Angie, and I celebrated our 22nd anniversary yesterday at the ballpark, and we were up in a suite watching the ball game. What an entertaining, wild, crazy baseball game that was, wasn't it?
Yeah, that really was. I mean, I think, like, a lot of it just shows, like, sort of the makeup of the character of this team. You know, the ability to always just punch back or fight back, and they just don't roll over. And I think, you know, after watching this club for basically 2 months now, it's fun. And they play with a lot of energy, which I think in the past couple of years we just weren't seeing. And I think the evolution of some of our younger players and really what's at stake with their careers, they're really making the most of it. So it's been fun. And you know, we certainly want to continue it. And we know today will be a tough day, but, you know, the approach has been one day at a time.
One day at a time. Arizona Diamondbacks throwing Brandon Pfaadt. He's very good. Sonny Gray is very good. Matthew Liberatore was excellent yesterday. And Miles Michaelis before that. And on it goes. Your starters are bringing it, John Mozeliak. And that has been the foundation, along with your defense, for success.
Yeah, I think, a lot of people always ask me, like, what's the one thing? It's not the one thing. It's a little bit of everything, and I think that's what's making this so cool. You know, when you think about it from a defensive standpoint, you think about it from an offensive standpoint, you think about it from a bullpen or pitching standpoint, we're just getting a lot of contribution from a lot of different people on any given night. And historically, that is, you know, the recipe for success in this league. And it's basically not one way of doing things. It allows you to have different ways to beat a club, and that's what we're seeing.
We saw yesterday some big moments from Jordan Walker. I'll get to those. But I mentioned earlier this morning that I love those little things like making contact and bringing runners in. After Walker's big hit, he's standing at second. You got to get him home somehow. And Scott, with the ground out, gets him to third. Pozo, who never strikes out, makes contact and gets him home. That's a big run right there. I mean, the Cardinals are – that might be the recipe for success offensively, is that you're just making contact and putting the ball in play, Mo.
Yeah, we're definitely striking out less than we have in past years, which is, I think, from just a pure entertainment standpoint, a lot more fun to watch. But I think the contribution you're seeing, really, 1 through 9, is what's giving us that depth and ability to score runs on any given day, and that's cool.
Without Wilson Contreras as well, how is he doing? My understanding is he's going to miss more time here with the back spasms.
Yeah, I think we're just trying to be precautionary here. Obviously, we want to get him back as soon as possible, but we also want to be smart and not have this thing drag out. So spoke with him this morning. Definitely he's feeling better, which is good news. But we got to get him to that point where he's confident where he can go, and we're not going to have any setbacks.
And the opportunity was there for Alec Burleson to play more, and he has come through for you at first base. Plays a good first base, too. And then there's Jordan Walker. I mean, this is just exactly, I think, what you're trying to see out of Jordan Walker. You don't want him to make mistakes, but he's going to. I mean, the young players are going to do it. And he goes up there, gets 2 strikeouts, a double. He has the misplay in right, and then a monster hit. I mean, if that's not indicative of what the Cardinals are trying to do, develop players, you just watched it all in a handful of innings yesterday from Walker, didn't you?
You know, we've been preaching all along patience, but we're also trying to get people to understand we are trying to win. And, you know, that's that fine line teams walk when they are trying to balance the ability to develop, but also try to find ways to get W's in the win column. And, you know, it's tough. It's hard to navigate, but I think Ollie and his staff are doing a tremendous job doing it. And, you know, right now I think, you know, just from a Cardinal fan standpoint, it's certainly entertaining.
How are the minor league operations right now? I know that you're focused on the big club, but you're in charge of the entire organization. Some of the things that are happening right now below the big club, are they exciting you?
They are. You know, I think the Cardinals are in a unique spot right now. Obviously, we've picked pretty high last year, 7th overall. We get the 5th this year. So just the depth we're able to add is certainly exciting. But the overall feeling right now, what's going on in the minor leagues, is, you know, very positive, and that's great to see. And so we're just going to keep trying to build on that. And, you know, obviously when you sit in this seat, it's not just about today. It's about what you're going to look like months from now, years from now, and that's something that we're not losing sight of. But we are certainly enjoying some of the fruits of our labor at the big league level right now.
You have Chaim Bloom and Rob Serfolio and Larry Day and a number of people working to collaborate. And I think that's a key word, isn't it, Mo? That has been a big thing here, is the collaboration between everybody to make sure that's the movement here, to get this organization moving forward, that you have that everybody is on the same page as to what happens moving forward.
Yeah, I do take a little bit of defense on that, as if we weren't doing that before.
Right.
You know, obviously, you know, we are looking at trying to inject some new ideas, new thoughts, and really some different strategies. But, you know, under Gary and his staff, I think they did a, you know, tremendous job, especially with the resources they had. You know, I don't want to ever take anything away from what he and his staff did over those years. But, you know, as we move into this next generation of leadership, obviously things are going to be done a little differently. And hopefully, you know, this organization sees those benefits and makes the most of it.
And that's exactly it. You know, it's all about looking forward and seeing what things are happening. But I agree with you in paying tribute to Gary LaRocque and all that his staff did to build, and you just said the key word there, with the resources that were available. And Mo, we don't need to go through the trade deadline discussion again because we just had it last week. You told me, plain and simple, you would love to have a complicated trade deadline at this point. This is really something to have your team right in the middle of this. You're two out. It's so early, but you're two out here on May 25th and very much in a division race. But before you know it, that deadline will creep up on you. 2 months away.
Yeah, look, we're 2 months into the season. It's a six-month season, so there's a lot of baseball to be played. But, you know, obviously our rival up north is playing really good baseball as well and got off to a very hot start. We got off to a very slow start. And, you know, we're trying to make up some ground and make the most of it.
That you're doing. Just one, you know, final thing. When you look at bullpen right now, are you happy with the way things are humming along? You have, of course, some options if you need to. I see, you know, the occasional Swanson up and Roycroft down and things like that. Are you happy, I guess my question is, with your depth if you need it for the bullpen?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. You think about like normal years, there's times where you're just like, I don't know who to bring up. Mm-hmm. But with guys like O'Brien, Munoz, Fernandez, those guys have been throwing the ball pretty well down there. And, you know, so I feel like, you know, we have the ability to stay fresh, rotate out. And, you know, in Roycroft's place, we just want to definitely get him more confidence in the ability to use that slider more consistently. The other day, you know, he just threw 11 straight fastballs. So we've got to get that into his repertoire where he's comfortable doing it. Because if he does, you know, he has a chance to be a swing and miss type reliever. And, you know, we're excited about that. But you got to be able to land those for strikes. You got to be able to get them to chase. And so his evolution is something we just got to be patient with. But overall, I just feel like, you know, we're really in a pretty good spot.
Development, you know, absolutely. Watching him and getting that repeatable delivery, absolutely. John Mozeliak, thank you. It's great to visit with you as always. Have a great Sunday and good luck today as you go for a sweep.
All right, thanks, Kim. See
you. Thank you. John Mozeliak with us on KMOX. We'll take a quick timeout, and when we come back, Bernie Miklas will join us to talk about the club and so much more. We have a lot to get into with Bernie on Sports on a Sunday Morning. We're from the Stiefel Sports Studio, and we'll be right back. Just an update, Indianapolis dealing with some rain in the area, so the Indy 500, they're getting close to starting that, but there's still some sprinkles, and they've got to be very careful over there. So minutes away, there's going to be some more rain coming to Indianapolis. Shouldn't be too bad before they finally get that started. It's not good news, though, for Kyle Larson, who is trying to run two races today, the Indy 500 and the Coca-Cola 600. Joining us on the line is Bernie Miklas. He is with us every Sunday at this time. Sometimes we move him because of Cardinal baseball, but the Cardinals game today, Bernie, is at 1:15, and they are on fire right now. That has been fun to watch. What a crazy game that was yesterday.
Oh, that was, man, I'd like to put a list together of the best games of the season. That would be on it. That would be up there pretty high because, boy, they couldn't score, and then they scored, and the Diamondbacks came back and jolted them in the top of the eighth. Cardinals recovered in the bottom of the eighth. I mean, just phenomenal. And then Helsley with the cliffhanger in their ninth. So the Cardinals are just, what I love about this is, you know, before Arizona came to town, the Cardinals had lost 3 out of 4 games. Is that a big deal? No. But I was curious to see, you know, like, how they would respond to, like, their first little stretch of, like, not winning games when you go 1-3. It's not a big deal. But for this team, we're always going to be checking them. We're always going to say, okay, how are they going to handle this? How are they going to handle that? Well, they come out and, you know, led by Matthew Liberatore and Miles Michaelis, and they come out and shut down. I'm talking about their starting pitchers, those two guys. They shut down one of the best offenses in baseball, their starting pitchers, 2 games in a row. And, yeah, there were some twists and turns and some suspense, but the bottom line is they responded to this stretch of losing 3 out of 4 by coming out and fighting the Diamondbacks with everything they had. And both of those games could have gone either way. But as we've seen the Cardinals do it so many times, they found a way to win. And I just really admire this team and its competitiveness.
I hear you. And, you know, the Diamondbacks are really good. I mean, don't be fooled by their record. They lost 3 of 4 to actually they split with the Dodgers. Isn't that right? No. They lost. Let's see. Let me see if I can find this. They against the Dodgers, they had they lost 3 of 4. And then before that, they played the Mets and struggled in that one as well. They split with the Dodgers. They lost 2 of 3 to the Mets. They played the Phillies before that and lost 2 of 3. They played the Mets at home and won 2 of 3. They played the Braves before that, a good Braves team, better than their record, and lost 2 of 3. They have had a gauntlet of a schedule. So, you know.
They have. Yeah, I think it's one of the they're one of the best teams in the National League. They got to get their pitching together. Although in this series, you know, Zach Gallen and Merrill Kelly were outstanding, but they're as a team they're allowing too many runs. But they're still one of the best teams in the NL, and that's the other thing. The Cardinals they match up very well against good teams. I mean, that was one of the questions we had, and I understand it because I asked it myself. You know, when the Cardinals got pounded by Boston, and you know they're you know the Mets swept them that time in New York and Atlanta beat them 2 out of 3 in Atlanta. And, you know, the question was, well, can they beat the really good teams? Well, the thing of it is, you know, Minnesota's a really good team. They swept them. Let's move down to Philadelphia. They won 2 series from Philly. They won a series from Houston. They won a series with Milwaukee, which had a winning record at the time. They beat the Mets. Now they've beaten the Diamondbacks. I mean, they're showing and they played, you know, they basically played, you know, the Tigers down to the wire. When you lose 2 out of 3, it's not that big of a deal. They played well against the Tigers, except for that final game. So no, they're checking every box. I mean, you know, remember we were all wondering, are they going to win on the road? Can they win consistently on the road? Well, they've passed that test. You know, can they fix the bullpen? They passed that test. Can they continue to win at home? They've passed that test. Can they beat good teams? They've passed that test. Can they handle adversity? They've passed that test. And that also applies to some individual players, you know, and maybe Tom, not that you're running the show, but let me just throw this one at you. Is Jordan Walker starting to find it a little bit? What a great performance by him yesterday.
Well, that game yesterday. Yeah. I mean, I'm in the seats yesterday watching the game and I'm thinking I went through the whole gamut when it came to Jordan Walker yesterday. The first two, I'm like, you know what? He's really struggling. I mean, he can't find it. He strikes out twice. Then he gets the hit, and I thought, what a great thing for him. Maybe this is it. You know, maybe the and then the play out in right field. Oh, Jordan, I mean, you gotta keep that ball in front of you. And then he comes back out there, of course, in a big moment, bang, gets the big hit. It tells me something about his intestinal fortitude, about him as a person, but also his skills. Yes, I think they have picked up. Those are two big clutch hits for the young man. We got to remember how young he is, Jordan Walker, Bernie.
Absolutely. You know, and if you look at it, he's had some good games lately. I mean, there was one Detroit game where he went 0-for-3, but he had had like hits in four. Let me think, 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5. He had had before that. He had had, you know, four at least a hit in 4 of his previous 5 games, with including a home run and including a double. Okay, so then the one Detroit blanked him on I think it was the Wednesday game. It was, and then he actually was a defensive replacement Friday, and then yesterday 2-for-4 double, 3 RBIs, 2 huge at bats as you just acknowledged. So he's got a little bit going on. He's got a little bit going on, and that's all you're kind of hoping to see is just that progress. And I think his at bats have been better. There's still some strikeout issues, but even those have gotten a little better lately. So that's a really good sign for the Cardinals.
I just think this starting rotation, giving them a chance to win, is a huge part of it. I mean, Liberatore was so good yesterday, but I cannot get over Miles Michaelis and what he has done to get himself back on track. That looks like the old Miles Michaelis back in 2018 when he was setting them up and getting their bullpen in position. He gives up 1 run in 6 innings. I mean, let's go. That's the guy you're looking for.
Yeah, he's been on fire. I mean, he's pitched great since that that time he got pummeled in Boston, which was the third series of the season. He's pitched really well. He's given a chance to win every game. And that's, see, I think Michaelis and Libertor both represent why this is such an appealing team, why this is such a team that is exceeding expectations. Let's face it, I'm not going to sit here and be a phony. I wrote Miles Michaelis off. I saw two seasons in a row where his ERA is over five. He's not getting any younger. He wasn't striking people out. He gets destroyed in Boston. And he statistically was one of the worst starting pitchers in baseball. He really was. I mean, it's a fact. But I didn't see this coming, what he would do after that nightmare at Fenway Park. He's been fantastic. And so if you would have asked anyone who is objective about this, like, what, you know, do you think Miles Michaelis will have a good season, a surprisingly good season? The answer would have been 98% of people would have said, no, of course not. What are you sniffing glue? Are you crazy? And then the other thing is then you take the combination of Matthew Libertor, who's never fully gotten a chance to start where they've committed to him as a starter. So you have the oldest guy in the rotation. He's been written off. He's been awful for 2 years in a row until that Boston start. And so you take the old guy who's been written off because he's gotten beat up a bunch. You take the youngest starter in the rotation who never got a shot. And we're all wondering, can he ever be a starting pitcher? Should maybe keep him in the bullpen. The fact that these are the two guys, with all due respect to Sonny Gray, these are the two guys that have been like carrying the ball. And the two of the biggest surprises of the season are Miles Michaelis and Matthew Libertor. So for my point is, it's for an underdog team to do well and to exceed expectations. One of the first things that's got to happen is that there's got to be individual players who have not had a lot of success. And then all of a sudden, wow, these guys are locked in. These guys are really good. And that's how an underdog becomes a contender. You have enough of those things happening, you know, in one season. When you're an underdog, you get these underdogs can rise to the top when they get these great contributions from people that weren't expected to do so. Maybe Victor Scott's in that camp as well. You know, if you think about it, he didn't make the club until basically the final day out of spring training, right? Mm-hmm. So I would say he's exceeded expectations, you know, so that's just been going on and on and on. And Ivan Herrera just never stops hitting, never takes a bad at bat, never. He's a success story. You see, they're having, and I'm leaving people out, don't get me wrong, but they have a lot of success stories going for them this year, players who are doing better than perhaps we thought they would.
The plan is working out so far for the Cardinals. Two games out, six games over, and they take on the Diamondbacks today and go for a sweep. Bernie Miklas, have an outstanding Sunday. We appreciate all that you do online and on air for us and others, and we will catch up with you real soon.
Thank you, brother. Always a pleasure to be with you. Take care.
Always good to be with Bernie Miklas on KMOX. Let me say one final thing to the fans here, is that we are hearing you out there. Do not underestimate Cardinals fans. They protested. The empty seats were there. But I was at the game yesterday. There is a life to the crowd. People are starting to come back. Heard you cheer, groan, and cheer again for Jordan Walker's things and things that he did, the hit, the misplay, the hit. Heard you boo Randall Grichuk when he did the jump shot motion, rounding the bases, approaching third after his home run. There's a lot of excitement right now among some of those fans. Don't think there isn't. This is a team that is a lot of fun right now. Cardinal baseball is next on KMOX.